Listening to it here in Durham, it makes me wonder, was there ever any kind of tradition here of reading in the factories, any kind of, it was prohibited? Yeah, it's such an incredible, not even to be able to listen. Wow. Right. I know in Cuba they're still continuing.
I was talking with somebody earlier whose father, where are you? And was a, he used to read, did you say? Or he was a cigar roller.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They said in the New York, I think Samuel Gompers, they said, was a reader in the factories too, right? And in the Yiddish factories in New York, there were readers. In the North?
You've interviewed women. Wow. Uh-huh. And did the other workers pay her? Uh-huh.
To keep her.
Because these readers that we were talking about or found out about in Florida were paid by the cigar workers. They took up a collection and paid the reader.
And the irony is that ultimately the workers, the hand rollers, were replaced by mechanization and the readers were replaced by the radio. So you just see that whole shift take place. We played that piece also because for us it was such an interesting way in which it was a collaboration. Gary Mormino and several of the people in Florida who had been doing work on the cigar readers and oral histories and interviews, and Tina Pacheco, a filmmaker, and that piece drew on the efforts of probably 20 people to help create that piece, especially because we were trying, I think we heard about it in May and we wanted to get it on the radio as soon as we could because it blew our minds so much. And, you know, so I urge you all to look for partnerships. We worked on a workshop yesterday, radio and oral histories. I don't know if it interests you, but to find radio producers who might be taking your work that you're doing as oral historians and shape stories out of them for the public. It's a wonderful mix.
Another thing I think you can notice from the work that we've played is we include a lot of other sound besides the interviews that we do, and sounds from a number of different sources. And when we started working on this project, we began asking everybody that we interviewed, do you have home recordings? Did anybody ever record you? Did anybody do an interview with you that we might combine into this program to sort of get a different texture, maybe a different time when someone had a different voice that you could include? I think we're doing Tony Schwartz as an example. You'll hear the old Tony and the young Tony being sort of speaking throughout. The real inspiration for a lot of this came from many years ago when we first started out as the Kitchen Sisters at our local radio station, and we were doing our local show. We played a lot of music, a lot of old jazz and 78s, and my dad had a box full of 78s in his garage. It's my dad's infamous garage, Ernie's garage, we call it. It has everything you could ever possibly need. Whenever you need anything, a sink, a chair, it's there. So anyway, he gave me this box of 78s, my mom's old 78s, and we went through them, and one of the records in this box was unmarked. It didn't have a professional label on it. It had a handwritten note on the outside of the cover that said, to Louie, play this side first. And the other side said, to Louie, love Mrs. B. And that's all we knew. But I said, Dad, who's Mrs. B? Who's Louie? My dad's name is Ernie. And he said, I don't have a clue. So we put this thing on, and it was a home-recorded letter done by a woman in the 1940s to her husband who was overseas in the war. And we were so stunned and struck. And we were working at the time on a piece about war and separation and World War II and the home front. And we're trying to interview lots of different people about that phenomena. And here was this record that in the language of the time, in a personal letter to her husband, she was communicating absolutely everything we were talking about, the anxiety, the some of the things she said was, Davia, you did the good imitation of this letter.
I defer to my colleague.
She says, hello, Louie, this is your wife again. Chi Lu, we ski in 43. Chi Lu, I hope so. I talked to Emil today. He wants to go skiing. And then there's this, she says, they jitterbug over there, honey. I bet they're not half as cute as we are they, hun? And she just talks about all this longing and anxiety, and it comes through in her talking on this record. And we began at that point saying, gee, there must must be other records like this that we could use. And my mom said, well, I made one of those records and sent it to your father. And she pulls out this recording, and it's a record that she had made to send to my dad.
How many people in this room made home recordings on 78s or 33s? Yeah. And once we started looking for it.
Once we started looking for them, they were everywhere. So this was sort of the inspiration for trying to get people to look and think about their own collections as resources in these programs.
Once we started looking, we were also looking for people who had defined the century in sound, who had done something nobody else like Sam Phillips had, and we came upon a man named Tony Schwartz, who's in New York, and we'll play this because as much as the series included people's home recordings and oral historians and sound collections, it was
this
individual.
Is NPR's
this is the sort of dub version, scratch. So when we start to couple turntables.